to Wings Nuts, the audio program that talks about each and every episode of classic 90s sitcom Wings. And I don't know about you, Emerson, but yo quiero Taco Bell.
Live mas.
No, but how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Yeah. And you?
Like I mentioned last time, I've just been moving, and that's like an odyssey. Moving gets harder and harder the older you get. It's, you know, I remember the days when I can like just bounce from one apartment to another and fill my trunk with some stuff, and it would be a couple hours work, but now it's a couple month long odyssey.
Dude, 100%. And I used to love moving because it was like an opportunity to kind of like try out a new place, a new area. Like there was something exciting about it. But now, unlike American solo project Reel to Reel, I do not like to move it.
Yeah, when I used to move, it would be like all about the feng shui, but now it's like all about the oh fuck me.
Mm-hmm. And I'm also at the age now where I'm like, you know what, I'm gonna hire people. Like it used to be like, yeah, I don't fucking give a shit. I'll just pack up some boxes. I'll like, you know, I'll stay up until 2 a.m. on like a Tuesday night, drinking red wine and like putting stuff in boxes and, you know, like getting familiar with like the items that I haven't really like even handled in a long time. Now I'm just like, let's just fucking hire some people.
Despite it all, we are gathered here today to talk Wings again. Yeah. And this is the season 3 episode. Episode 5 of season 3, is that correct?
That's correct.
Oddly entitled, If Elected, I Will Not Live. And happy Halloween, Emerson, because this was broadcast on October 31st of 1991.
Woo-woo. So there's actually IMDb trivia about the title.
Oh, can we hear it?
Regarding the episode title, in 1884, William Tecumseh Sherman was proposed as a Republican candidate for the presidency. He responded, I will not accept if nominated and will not serve if elected. This line has often been rephrased as, if nominated, I will not run. If elected, I will not serve.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so I guess it's a play on that.
That phrase everyone remembers so well.
Yes.
Wait, what year did you say that phrase was from?
1884.
So even in like 1991, it's probably safe to assume that the title left a lot of people scratching their heads.
I bet that's true. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, cool. Did you happen to pull a IMDb synopsis, a Paramount Plus synopsis, an Amazon synopsis, any sort of synopsis?
Should we go short and sweet with just the wiki?
Ed Mahoney IV come up with anything?
I don't think so.
Okay.
We can try. There is like a nice long IMDb synopsis that might be Ed Mahoney IV.
Yeah. Why don't you just hit us with your favorite one?
All right. After Roy decides to run for Nantucket City Council, Joe is urged to throw his hat in the ring. Faye makes an appearance for Joe and ends up being endorsed by the local newspaper. Lowell takes a beauty parlor poll and finds Joe is far behind Roy in the race. Joe realizes he does not have a chance and steps down. Faye is determined to win until Roy confides in her a sad childhood school election story.
Mm-hmm.
During the debate the next night, the audience begins to laugh at Roy. Faye recalls Roy's tale of woe and pictures him as a sullen child standing at the podium. She decides to speak up for him and his ideas, thus handing him the election. Roy happily celebrates drinking champagne alone. In other happenings, Helen places a classified ad to... I misread that. In other happenings, Helen places a classified ad to sell her prized cello, but will only sell to someone who will take care of it, not to a child or man with a monkey.
You'd call that short and sweet?
That's not the short and sweet one. I was looking for a Mahoney.
Okay.
There wasn't much Mahoney in that one.
That was quite a complete synopsis. Mm-hmm. Did our work for us.
So I went to a Shakespeare in the Park last night.
Oh, how was that?
Yeah. It was cool. They did Julius Caesar.
Okay.
You know what's interesting is the idea of these elected officials feeling threatened by a public figure who's too popular.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels like almost reminiscent of like Trump's election.
Yes.
Where people like he was kind of like got in there just due to his like celebrity, his popularity, without having any like real ideas of how to lead, you know, except for saying we need to like not do certain things. Mm-hmm. He had ideas about what not to do, but not any real ideas about what to do. And so,
yeah.
Anyway.
So, yeah, I mean, cool. What you're basically saying is Trump is basically just like Julius Caesar.
Yeah. He's a real strong leader. I hope that we name a new month after him.
Or a salad.
There probably is a salad named after
the Trump salad.
Yeah. I bet it's got like brown bread and baked beans on it.
Hey, like a 1 pound crouton on top.
Oh my God. It's just crouton. It's just the oops, all crouton salad.
A crouton smashing a tomato.
Oh, that's fantastic. So do you have the facts and figures?
Yeah, well, we can break down the cast and crew here.
Cool.
Okay, so this episode was once again directed by Andy Ackerman, who's been with us this whole season. But for a first time turning in a script for this episode is Larry Balmaglia. Larry Balmaglia. And he is a producer-writer. A number of credits. It looks like he got his start also on The Jeffersons. Three's Company, Rhoda, 9 to 5, the TV show, MASH. And then I looked this show up and actually watched the first episode, a show called Jennifer Slept Here, about a film star who dies and becomes a ghost and then starts haunting like a 14-year-old boy that lives in the house now.
Wow.
Yeah, then he wrote the whole season. It's one season. It's all on YouTube. Kind of interesting. Then he wrote on Night Court, After MASH, Charles in Charge, What's Happening Now, Dear John, Cheers, Saved by the Bell, and Sister, Sister. So quite an illustrious career. And I think we're going to get some more episodes of Wings penned by him as well. So if we like this one, we're in luck. There's more to come.
Cool.
Turning to the guest stars we had, Tom Clunis turned in a performance as Mr. Larson. Now, he has appeared on Guiding Light, Little House on the Prairie, Cheers, and Star Trek DS9.
I clocked that. I know that you're a big fan. Oh, mm-hmm. Do you like DS9? I assume you do.
DS9 is my favorite.
Okay, cool.
My favorite. And yeah, pretty much anytime one of our guest stars appears on Wings, I'm going to highlight any of their Star Trek appearances. Then we had Leslie Woods. She played the moderator. Now, she has appeared on Bonanza, All My Children, Days of Our Lives, The Rockford Files, Dallas, A-Team, L.A. Law, Clueless, and Charmed. Then, this is interesting, because this guest star previously guest starred on another recent episode. His name is Christopher Michael Moore. And he does not have a lot of IMDb appearances. And the only really thing worth mentioning in his CV is Wings. And it looks like he appears in about 3 episodes of Wings, all of them as different characters.
Oh, interesting.
He's credited as man number 1. Then we had Gregory White credited as man number 2. He has appeared on Married with Children, Dallas, MacGyver, Family Matters, Fresh Prince, Sister, Sister, Grace Under Fire, Wayans Brothers, Becker, and Parks and Rec.
And these are just like the men at the debate, probably, right?
Yeah, I think they're the kind of the hecklers who have some questions for Roy, I believe.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Then we had Riff Hutton.
Played Ooh, great name.
Great name. And he had a great career, too, because he played the TV anchorman.
Oh, yeah.
And he's just like a really long list of credits, just to name a few here. Jeffersons, 227, Night Court, Different World, Alien Nation, the TV show, Full House, Doogie Howser, MD. On Doogie Howser, he actually had a recurring role as Dr. Ron Welch. And he was on Star Trek The Next Generation, played a Klingon. Seinfeld, and a couple different iterations as different characters on NCIS shows.
Cool.
Then lastly, we had Drew Joseph Rowe, who appeared as Little Roy.
Yeah.
Little Roy. No lines, but he got a credit. I guess if you take your pants down as a child, you get to get a credit. So not
I didn't.
Not
I still don't.
It doesn't count when you take him off camera.
Ah.
Okay, so he played Little Roy, and he appeared on Parker Lewis Can't Lose, and I did a little bit of clicking around. I believe he actually played young Coob, probably in a flashback on Parker Lewis Can't Lose.
God, that is perfect.
Isn't that great? Because then Coob plays Roy's son in an episode of Wings.
So he's like Roy's son's son almost.
Isn't that wild? It's kind of like if Roy's son is himself, because the actor that played Roy's son, another actor that played Roy's son played Roy as a young man.
Right.
And then also played his son, Coop. It's getting confusing to me.
Yeah. No, you're right.
Yeah. It's like a weird nesting doll going on there. Yeah,
because he's both playing... The same actor is playing Roy and his son. And so in a way it's like, yeah.
Yeah. I wonder if they talked about that offset or on the set, but.
I think they talked about it on the Parker Lewis Can't Lose set. They synchronized their watches and they said, wait a second. So one of the character, the one that you said appears in a few Wings episode, it said that he was the customer in Murder, She Wrote. I'm trying to remember if there was like a significant customer.
And it in universe, it could be the same character.
It's like the just douchebag.
Yeah.
It's the guy that that Helen gives Roy's phone number to. Yes. He's like, this better be decaf. Cause I found my notes from that episode.
Mm-hmm.
That rules. Yeah. So but you're right. But he's playing the same character more or less.
Oh yeah. And that's funny to think about. He heckles Roy during the debate, but then at some point you have to imagine he called Roy at like 3 a.m. when the coffee kept him up.
Yeah. So he's like in the audience. He's like, something about this guy really irritates me. I can't figure out what it is.
He's just straight up torturing. He's Roy's torturer.
Yes. You know, also, Roy calls the redhead by name in this episode.
He does. I made a note on that. Katie.
Yeah. They don't list her in the credits though, do they?
In this episode, they don't, but I'm trying to remember in the last episode where they did list her. Did they list her as Katie? Cause there was a name.
I think they did.
Maybe I can just check really quick
here. Yeah. I'm clicking through as well.
Yep. Nope. She's credited on 7 episodes of Wings, but always as, let me see here. Clicking.
Yeah, Arrow Mask Girl.
She's always credited as Arrow Mask Girl, but that is
Katie. Arrow Mask Gal.
Arrow Mask Girl.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes they spell Arrow Mask differently.
I feel like there is a Katie, though.
Well, Katie's the redhead.
You will know. I mean, I feel like there might be a credited Katie. I can do one real quick check.
You could search Wings and Katie. Cross search and cross reference that. And then collate your data.
I am wrong. Unless they spell her name weird, because I just searched K-A-T and there's no. Yeah, there's no.
I think it's K-A-T-I-E.
I know, but like that would give it to me.
Okay.
There's a Kathy. Yep. Okay. So yeah, must be Aaron Mask Girl. But yeah, her name's Katie. That's cool. Good to know.
Yeah. Maybe one day she'll get a line. She finally got, it only took 3 seasons to give her a name.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Shall we do some news?
Give me that.
I was expecting more Halloween news, being that it's Halloween, but.
Right.
I pulled this from the Nantucket Inquirer and Mirror. Single Trump shuttle flight will serve island for Christmas stroll. This is written by Hobson Woodward, staff writer. Direct service from New York to Nantucket will reappear briefly in December when a Trump Shuttle 727 will carry passengers to the island for a Christmas stroll. The 163-passenger airplane will be chartered by Barton Travel. It will depart New York at 3:15 p.m. Friday, December 6th for the one-hour flight to the island. The plane will return to New York at 4:30 p.m. on Sunday, December 8th, according to travel agent Lady Lee. Round-trip fare will be $329.
"It's a service for the island," said Dealey. "It's from LaGuardia, which is what everybody wants."
And so I guess this is big news, a charter service. And I found it interesting because Wings is an airport show. This has to do with airplanes. And Nantucket has had a problem keeping flights traveling from New York to Nantucket or something. And I just found it interesting that this was a Trump plane. And I Googled Trump shuttles. And I guess it was a kind of a charter airline service that Trump had for a while.
Of course.
Yeah. Oh, and then in the article later, it says the news comes after Continental Express left the island market on October 1st. This left Nantucket without scheduled service to the New York area for the winter. Business leaders said last week that they feared the lack of service would mean the loss of the lucrative New York tourist market for the Christmas stroll. That event attracts thousands from the mainland for a weekend of holiday shopping. So I guess these would be the holiday people from the mainland coming. Not the summer people.
Yeah.
Holiday people.
Interesting. Wow. Thousands, they say.
Thousands for the Christmas stroll.
So give me that. I've got an article from the Inquirer Mirror. Safety Advice for Halloween by Hobson Woodward, staff writer. Halloween can be a frightfully good time for ghosts and goblins, police say, as long as some safety precautions are followed by children and parents. Trick-or-treaters and adults who are out and about tonight should take extra care to ensure a safe night for all, according to Detective Tim Galvin, the police department's juvenile safety officer. Adults driving cars pose the greatest risk to costuming children. "People driving have to be that much more cognizant of what they are doing," said Galvin. Police officer. It's so funny because I just read it as police officer, but police offer these other tips. Kids should stick to neighborhoods they know, and parents should inspect candy brought back by their children. Galvin recommends giving and accepting commercially available candy rather than homemade goodies. "I think I'll stick with the wrap stuff," said Galvin. "Parents should look for anything that looks like it's been tampered with." Costumes that reflect headlights are best. Children should also consider carrying flashlights or glow sticks sold in toy stores or raves. "Anything that marks the fact that you're there," he said. Young children should be accompanied by an adult. Small children might also want to carry their masks between houses to ensure they don't trip and fall. Parents should make sure costumes provide children's adequate vision and garments that will not trip up children. Pet owners should keep dogs leashed or inside to keep them from tangling with trick-or-treaters. Galvin said vandalism on the island is not any worse here than in mainland communities. This year, officers will keep a special eye out for teenagers illegally using war game guns that fire paint pellets, he said. Residents have reported several cases of people and property being hit by the paint pellets in recent weeks.
Yeah. But yeah, will there come a day when we don't need to have that same article written every single year about like Halloween safety tips?
I know it's so silly because it's like it also always has to do with like the idea that a resident of a house would hand a child something dangerous when like it could easily be traced back to their house. Like, first of all, if you were going to commit that kind of crime, why would you do it from like your own house?
Yes. And like all the times I've been trick-or-treating, I can't recall one time that someone was like, here's some homemade fudge or here's a homemade cookie.
When like, I was a kid, there would sometimes be like candy apples.
Mm-hmm.
And like we would occasionally get those in Van Nuys growing up.
Mm-hmm. I think everyone's more or less gotten the memo that, you know, just give out the little fun size candy.
Too bad Miley Cyrus didn't get the memo about wearing stilettos to that party.
What?
It's about her song Party in the USA.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, she makes a comment that everybody's in stilettos, and she says, I must have not got the memo. And you know what?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, maybe you missed that.
Yeah, spend a little time at your desk, Miley.
Yeah.
Try being a professional.
Yeah, read your inbox.
Uh-huh. Okay, I pulled this here for... from the Nantucket Inquirer Mirror, but really in both papers, this and the Boston Globe, there was a lot of stories about, I guess, a big storm hit that Atlantic region. So this is by Hobson Woodward, just killing it on the bylines in the Nantucket Inquirer Mirror.
Uh-huh.
And this headline says, storm devastates harbor and businesses. So it highlights, you know, the most important part of any human tragedy, the businesses that are affected. I'll begin here. Two major businesses suffered devastating destruction when a major Atlantic storm smashed into Nantucket Wednesday, causing millions of dollars worth of damage. And it goes on to detail some houses and cottages, couches and television sets and rugs littered the wharf this morning. And so here's a quote from Alfred Sanford. He owned some of cottages that were affected. What can I tell you? I was really sad to lose the old houses. One was over 100 years old. And then Adrienne McCallie, she stopped by the police. She was trying to reach a cottage. And here's a quote from her.
I came to check on the cat in a friend's boathouse. It's a very old cat. I think by now the living room is underwater.
And so, wow. Yeah, so Nantucket got hit hard by this storm that affected the region.
Wild, yeah. I mean, that I'm sure that's probably like on everybody's mind.
Especially Lowell's and Bunny's, if she's still living with them.
It snowed in Burbank this year, and like it's all we could talk about for like a week.
Yeah. Wasn't that wild when you like look up on the mountain and see snow?
Like, yeah. What? I mean, I went to like Petco and I came out and there was like snow on my car, and I was like, what the fuck? And it was apparently it was something between snow and rain. It's when like it's
sleet.
No, it's like had an interesting name, like grog or something like that.
Okay.
Grapple. Yeah. Grapple, also called soft hail, hominy snow, or snow pellets, is precipitation that forms when super cold water droplets and air are collected and freeze on falling snowflakes.
Okay.
So it's kind of like a mix between like freezing water and snowflakes. So yeah, it looked like soft hail almost.
Mm-hmm.
Give me that. So I'm going blind in this one. Fun and a few bucks at Wednesday night bingo. Oh man. And this is like a great sign of the time by Mary Lancaster, staff writer. Cigarette smoke spirals to the ceiling. Boxes of candy litter the tables, vying for space with soda cans, pocketbooks, and Dabo ink colored markers. It's a little piece of Americana. It's Wednesday night bingo at the VFW hall. Every week, year-round, at least 40 people fill this room trying their luck at prizes, sometimes totaling hundreds of dollars. New faces show up now and then, but mostly it is a regular crowd. Some admit they've logged decades of devotion to a game based on the simple chance of winning a line of numbers in a row. I love it. I'm lucky at it too, says regular Mary Nelson. I've been playing for 20 years. These bingo enthusiasts come to the VFW partly for the fun of an evening with friends, but they take the game seriously. Debbie Childs won the first game and says she'll stay all night and try to break her record. That's a good one, calls John Maligan as he checks Nelson's bingo on a game of four corners. There are 25 games on the agenda each Wednesday, games such as Top Hat, Cluster of Nine, and Checkerboard. Anyway, I love bingo. You play bingo at all?
I do dig bingo. Yeah, it's been ages, but I could see myself down at a VFW hall playing bingo again one day.
Yeah, it's fun. It's, yeah, like one of them describes it as relaxing. You know what's funny is like bingo was featured in a Roseanne episode probably around the same time. Mm-hmm. And the woman, you know, like the kind of stereotyped bingo enthusiast where like they have the little troll doll yes. things and like lots of good luck charms was played by the woman that went on to play Mimi on the Drew Carey show.
Oh, that's wild. It was like I could see her as a bingo lady.
Yeah, she was perfect in it. It was like an early role for her.
Give me that. Okay. I got this from Nantucket Inquirer Mirror. Historic trick-or-treat route. Fun for kids as well as homeowners by Mary Lancaster. Prowling the dark streets of town on Halloween night has always been fun for the island's young children. Marsha Fader Brock hopes that adding a slice of history to local trick-or-treating enhances the magic of the holiday. This year is the second Halloween that Fader Brock has handed out special map, encouraging kids to seek their goodies at the doors of Nantucket's historic homes. It's not only a safe and convenient route, it offers a mini lesson in early architecture at the same time. I remember the magic of Halloween night, being out dressed up and visiting people's homes. This helps build a sense of community here. People just welcome you into their homes. A historic preservationist, Fader Brock says her move to organize the Halloween walk in town is an outgrowth of the curriculum on historical architecture she developed for the elementary school. Also focusing trick-or-treating in the core area makes for an easy route to follow that has little traffic. It's a new tradition that is welcomed by families and homeowners alike.
That is so funny. I love like, because you know, what's funny is now in my 40s, I would actually like love the chance to like explore like the architecture of Nantucket. And like, it'd be really cool to see like these different historical houses and how they're decorated, but no 11-year-old gives a shit about that.
They're like, I don't want architecture homework. I want to dress up like Spider-Man and get me some candy bars.
They're like, what do you want? Like Baby Ruth, Snickers, or this other one? I want to know who did your foyer. Like, oh, wow. Some like 10-year-old kid in like a Raphael mask. Did you see on page, this is back to the Inquirer Mirror, on page 2A, so the second page of the whole thing. Mm-hmm. Chief concern, a scarecrow depicting fire chief Bruce Watts is joined by friend Sarah Dizel, age 3.5 years. At press time, the Halloween party at the firehouse, scheduled for 6 p.m. today for kindergartners through fifth grade, was expected to occur despite Wednesday's storm. And it's this like, really? Do you see this picture?
I saw the picture, yeah.
Oh, it is so terrifying. It's like, I mean, because it's also like the quality of like a 30-year-old scan. Mm-hmm. This black and white photo in like you know, an old Weekly Island newspaper. But it's like a tiny child dressed as like a scary clown with an oversized bow tie, holding hands with like a scarecrow with one of its hands up. And like, I guess the police chief's face is like masked on it.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, man. It is real creepy looking.
Nightmare fuel. Yeah.
100%.
Give me that.
All right.
I'm in the Boston Globe now.
Okay.
For Arabs, Israelis, a historic meeting. Bush calls in Madrid for compromise on land. So there was like a big Middle East kind of conference between some of the major powers, Gorbachev and Bush. They were in Madrid to talk Middle East. And near this article, they had a little box kind of breaking down some of the major points that have happened in Middle East affairs recently. So one says President Bush implored Israelis and Arabs to strike a deal centered on territorial compromise and permanent treaties. Mikhail Gorbachev of the Soviet Union said Israelis and Arabs must seek a shared victory. It would be unforgivable to miss this opportunity. Secretary of State James A. Baker III said Israel and its Arab neighbors began to crawl towards peace. So a bunch of things like that, like little hinge points that are going on. And the article reads, the leaders of Israel and its sworn Arab enemy sat down together yesterday for the first time since the birth of the Jewish state in 1948, embarking on a peace process that the Bush administration hopes will stabilize the conflict-ridden Middle East. And it goes on to detail some of the things Bush and Gorbachev and others said. But at the end of the article, it says, but as Middle East delegates privately acknowledge the end of the Cold War, that is the collapse of the Soviet Union, has meant not so much joint U.S.-Soviet maneuvering as U.S. maneuvering without Soviet interference. That was seen earlier this year in the Gulf War. The United States is running this show entirely, said an Israeli official. It has orchestrated it all. If Bush's speech is conciliatory to us, it is because he has angered us repeatedly by giving in to Arab demands on the format. It is all masterfully planned. So, you know, some more always good news coming from the Middle East. And, mm-hmm. you know, this conference is remembered today as the turning point where peace in the Middle East was won. And ever since then, we've had no conflict in Israel. It's all sorted out.
Do you think people would still want peace in the Middle East if it wasn't an easy rhyme?
Not at all. No.
Like if it was called like the Middle Core, they'd be like war in the Middle Core.
Exactly. Yes. Has a nice ring to it, so it's something worth fighting for.
By the way, I'm also scrolling through the Boston Globe now, but I just realized that the storm that they're talking about, that's what the movie The Perfect Storm is based on.
I had that thought, and I didn't go to investigate it, but is that the case?
It is, yeah. It says the 1991 Perfect Storm, also known as the No Name Storm.
Wow.
Perfect Storm film is based on the 1997 creative nonfiction book of the same name. And the film was adapted by William D. Whitliff with an uncredited rewrite by Bo Goldman and tells the story of the Andrea Gale, a commercial fishing vessel that was lost at sea with all hands after being caught in the perfect storm of 1991.
Well, there you go. Well, that was a film starring Mark Wahlberg, right?
Yeah, it was George Clooney, Mark Wahlberg, Diane Lane, William Fichtner, Karen Allen, Bob Gunn. I remember liking that movie.
Yeah, I didn't catch it because it looked really boring, but
I enjoyed it. Okay. I like stuff like that.
Yeah, I'll watch it on from your recommendation.
Give me that. So I found a little snip in Names and Faces that relates to something we talked about previously. Christo's Regrets. After his Two Nation Umbrella exhibit was cut short last weekend by the death of a spectator, the artist Christo said his artwork was part of life and he must live with the consequences of the real world. I will live with that tragedy to the end of my life, Christo said Monday after returning from Japan to the California mountains pass, where one of his 485-pound umbrellas tore loose in a storm and killed a woman.
Damn.
Sad, sad. I know.
Give me that.
All right.
So I have one last article here from the Boston Globe. Senate. But I should mention that. Oh, there was a lot of scallop talk in the Nantucket Inquirer and Mirror. Mm-hmm. Like all the scallop stories just canceled each other out. And it left me not wanting to pull any of the articles. Mm-hmm. But I just want to acknowledge before I close out the Nantucket Inquirer and Mirror that there was a lot of new scallop news going on.
Oh, sure.
But my final article comes from the Boston Globe entitled Senate Panel Approves Revamped Student Loan Program. Wonder why I chose this one. I don't know. After fending off attempts by Republicans to reduce the size of federal grants for college students, the Senate Committee on Labor and Human Resources yesterday approved a bill overhauling the $13 billion a year student aid program. The bill, which is expected to be voted on by the full Senate before the holiday recess, calls for increasing the size of the federal Pell Grant government and eventually making it an entitlement program. Under the skipping ahead, under the Senate bill, the maximum Pell Grants would increase from the current $3,100 per student to $3,600 in 1994 and to $5,200 in 1999. The grants would be guaranteed entitlement by that time, meaning there would be a year-to-year budget item. Currently, they are a discretionary item and they are not always fully funded. These perennial issues like paying for school, which like we're in this time, we're coming to a point where student grants are a bit different, but federal student loans were on pause because of COVID and they're about to all come due essentially. And like a lot of people are projecting that we're going to hit a major like financial crisis when those loans payments start coming due again.
Wild. Yeah.
Yeah.
Give me that. There's an Elvis article. Ooh. And besides, he's not dead. The Memphis JCs have apologized to an official of Elvis Presley's estate for a haunted house that included a dead Elvis exhibit and say they will tone it down. It was never our intention to offend anyone or upset the family of the late Elvis Presley, said a letter from the JCs to Todd Morgan, director of communications for Presley's estate. JC's officials said the haunted house was set up to raise money for charity. It included a Presley impersonator in a coffin and a room decorated with a toilet, empty pizza boxes, pill bottles, and partly eaten jelly donuts. Apparently references to Presley's weight and drug woes.
You know, you don't want to offend the memory of a racist pedophile, you know?
Mm-hmm. Jared, I need you to apologize to the Presley estate for that.
As I'm trying to think of like a Marie Presley joke on the eve of her death.
Oh, did she just pass away?
Yeah, Lisa Marie Presley just died like last week, I think, or this week.
Oh, man. I know Sinead O'Connor just passed. That was really sad.
That was a tough one for me. Yeah.
Yeah. Is U2 playing fair? The Irish rock group U2 has stormed to the top of the British charts with its new single, The Fly. Indie-Canadian Bryan Adams' record 16-week reign at the top with Everything I Do It For You. But critics blasted the Irish rockers for using underhanded tactics by putting the record, their first in 2 years, on sale for only 3 weeks. A U2 spokesman denies that it's a marketing ploy, adding, they only did it because they want to release 2 singles and their new album before Christmas. Later, wait and see what they do to people who own an iPhone.
Yes.
randomly find an entire album on. I have like one final kind of fun one. Mm-hmm. Price's dark secret. Scaremeister Vincent Price knows all about the terrors of things that go bump in the night.
Ooh, yes, I'm Vincent Price.
The dark is probably the thing that is most frightening to me, the 80-year-old horror star tells People magazine just in time for Halloween. I still don't like pitch darkness. I have all sorts of fancy night lights.
I was thinking of joking, like, oh, I sleep with a night light.
Yeah.
But he said it himself.
Yeah. Yeah. Kind of charming.
I have only the most ornate night light.
Is that Vincent Price or Antonio?
Yeah. Yes, my Vincent Price impression is bleeding into my Antonio impression.
Cool. Do you have anything?
Oh, watch out, children. There's a tingler in the theater.
Do you have any last little bits?
No, the only little bits I might mention is on this day, Halloween in 1991, the number one song in the nation of the United States of America was Emotions by Mariah Carey.
Cool.
The number one movie on this day, Halloween 1991, was House Party 2.
Oh, man. I love those movies. I wonder... Do you have like any idea of what you probably went as for Halloween 1991?
God, I was 11 years old. What grade are you in 11? I can remember the grade.
I think like fifth or sixth grade.
Oh my God. Yeah. Well, in fifth grade, I went as Captain Picard of Star Trek. And I had like a bald cap. Mm-hmm. But even at that young age, I had a what doctors call a humongous head. And I remember ripping the bald cap and being sad. So then I was just like some other Star Trek person with a mullet.
Oh no.
Yeah.
I feel like, I wonder if I like had some kind of Ninja Turtle thing going on that year.
Mm-hmm.
Like, cause like, I think 91, I would have loved, like, I was looking at like the top movies that year. Turtles 2. I for sure saw that in theaters. My Girl. I might have gone as a Macaulay Culkin after he got stung by bees.
You did not. You did not.
No, I didn't. Oh, I might have gone as Hannibal Lecter. That's also not true. I know around that time I did go as Ed Grimley.
Yes, that's an amazing costume for you.
Yeah.
I love you in that costume.
Yeah, I loved Ed Grimley. I thought he was the funniest character in the world.
Yeah.
And I think like a year or two later, I was like doing Mortal Kombat type costumes.
Cool. Like cool guy costumes.
Yeah. I mean, every Halloween I was trying to dress as something that I thought was cool.
Yes. Yeah. The only other costume, the only other contender for what I was this Halloween was one year. It was either the year before or after I was Captain Picard. Me and my friend did a combo costume, Hans and Franz from Saturday Night Live.
Oh, no way.
Yes.
That's so cool. I already ask you, like, did you listen to like the Hans and Franz movie that Conan O'Brien's been reading on his podcast?
No, I don't remember you asking me that. I would love to listen to that.
So basically in like around 91, probably around this time, Conan, Robert Smigel, Dana Carvey, and what's his name? Franz or Hans, you know, the one I didn't name. Kevin Nealon?
Yes.
Them, and I don't forget if there's anybody else, they basically wrote a Hans and Franz movie.
And, how could you not? Yeah.
And they had like Arnold on, like the story revolves around Arnold Schwarzenegger pretty heavily, and they had him on board. And I think like the Last Action Hero, that's kind of the reason that he gave in the end, is that like the Last Action Hero didn't do well. And so he was like, I don't think playing a version of myself is a good idea, because that was the idea of the Hans and Franz movie, is that he plays their cousin who came to America and became successful.
Oh, God. Meanwhile, I'd love to see that.
Yeah, it's a fun listen. So it's Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend.
Yeah, I'm going to listen to that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like a four part, and each one is like, you know, 20 to 30 minutes of it.
Yeah. And I just remembered the bit we did when we trick or treated.
Oh, yeah.
When someone opened the door, we'd say, I'm Hans and I'm Franz and we're here to trick or treat.
Oh, that is so funny. Man.
Yeah. I think we're ready to dive into this episode. And again, we are talking the Halloween episode from season 3 entitled If Elected, I Will Not Live.
Which doesn't mention Halloween once.
It doesn't, sadly.
Yeah. Yeah. So we start with the cold open, as they often do on this show. And it's like, Helen is mad. This is a universal thing that everyone can relate to. Helen is mad about a parking ticket. Her front bumper or something is like, was this far, you know, she holds her hands apart, indicating a length about equal to Joe's penis. That you saw it all. The whole thing. It's on. Nothing compares to it. Just the continuing the tradition of impersonating people that have recently passed away. Anyway, she's like, you know what? I'm not going to pay. And I've definitely, have you had that thought before where you're just like so mad about some unfair fine that you're like, you know what? Screw this. I'm just going to ignore it.
No, I'm not cool enough to think that. I'm more the guy who like brews and gets upset about it and then writes lengthy emails telling myself something will happen and it'll go somewhere and I'll plead my case and nothing happens and I just pay it.
Yeah. I know that like, I know red light cameras were something that you could kind of ignore because mm-hmm. that was like run by like a third party.
Yes.
But I got one. I guess like California rolled a stop sign in what felt like a parking lot in Encino, but it ended up being like part of like a state park system or something.
Okay.
And there was a fucking camera that like took a picture of me and my license plate, and then it sent me $100 ticket. And I was like researching it, like what'll happen if I don't pay it? Like what kind of authority can they actually like prevent me from registering my car next year? And in the end, my roommate was like, yeah, just pay it. Like so-and-so didn't pay it. And then like, they like came after him.
Yeah. Yeah. It ends up being not worth the trouble. You can't fight the state, you know?
I did though. I fucking pulled this move because if you try to pay using like your bank account, they charge you like a $4 convenience fee. And I was like, fuck that. This is equally convenient for you. And mm-hmm. so I mailed a goddamn check in, which means that they had to have somebody like open up that envelope, take the check out, you know, process it that way. And so I hope that it caused them way more trouble than it cost me.
Oh, yeah. There you go. You got them, dude.
That's
you
my
got
them. My little petty move. If there's ever like a convenience fee that can be made, that I can just eliminate by just mm-hmm. making it more inconvenient for them, I will do that.
Fill that envelope with chewed gum, make it totally inconvenient for them.
Yes. Yeah. Full of pennies.
Oh, they'll love that.
So she's kind of like, what's the worst that could happen? And then Brian runs through like a scenario.
A litany of terrible events cascading into her life.
Yeah. Well, they take you to court, you lose, they fine you and you don't pay it. They put a lien on your house, attach future earnings, you're penniless, you turn to a life of vice and prostitution, you get arrested, end up in jail, and live out the rest of your days sharing a dirty toilet with a woman named Dutch.
There you go. And then what does Helen say?
Got a stamp.
Yeah, a stamp. Yeah.
Yeah.
So she's going for that, even though I know that like you can't pay online at this time. I think she's doing it just to kind of stick it to them.
Yep.
This is like, I don't know, should give it a rating? Your thoughts?
It's in between a 2 or a 3. I would just say a 3.
I'm going to go 1.5. Like, yeah. I don't know. It was very meh. It was just like, maybe 2.
Okay, yeah, I'm going to go 2 as well. I'm changing mine to 2.
It's like it's a relatable scenario, but it's not like a... There's not a lot that happens with it.
And we get the first appearance this episode of the Brian Tie.
Brian's Tie Report.
So we got Wisconsin Tie.
Yeah. Is this the only tie this episode?
No, there's also the 49, the cowboy hat tie.
What? Oh, damn, I missed it. Yeah, so this is greatest hits episode.
Yeah, they're both actually, I think both ties are the same color. So it's easy to kind of like not realize that he changed his ties partway in.
That's why I mixed them up.
Yeah, they're that kind of like burgundy stuff.
They look like, actually, now that I think about it, they look like two ties that may have come in like a 2-pack or something, you know?
Yeah.
Don't they?
Father's Day is around the corner. Come down to Dyson's Ties and buy a 2-pack of ties featuring the state of Wisconsin and Native American head and a lasso. Or is it a horse head? I don't remember.
Representing the spirit of the West.
Yes.
Your dad will delight to wrap this around his neck.
And he can't whip you with it because it's not a belt.
He'll have fantasies of hanging himself from the rafters with this beautiful tie.
Is really a 2-pack of ties the best you can do for the man that raised you and made you who you are? Why not?
Your father hates you, and he should.
Okay, so I want to say about the first scene. I love that they have like an establishing shot of Nantucket right off the bat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you love those Nantucket glory shots.
I really do. You know what? Like, the more I watch the show, the more I'm like, I should just... The next time I like have a vacation, I should just go visit Nantucket. Yeah. That's not going to be realistic now that like I don't have a guaranteed job.
But, yes. You know. Yeah.
If I did, if I had been locked in, I got like a little bit of money saved up. It would have been a nice thing to do.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd love to go to Nantucket.
Also, we opened the scene with some jammy tunes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what's up? That's a new ditty for Wings, isn't it?
I'm not sure if it is, but for some reason it stuck out to me.
Yeah.
So we're in the airport and Lowell's hanging up campaign posters for Roy.
Yes. And he gets the great, when his stapler jams, he gets the great idea of trying to unjam it, holding the stapler against his leg. Uh-huh. And this goes on for like a long time and Joe's just watching. Uh-huh. And Joe knows what's going to happen. The audience knows what's going to happen. And I guess we just like all watch and wait for it to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And then it happens.
Mm-hmm.
Lowell staples his leg.
He does try on other surfaces first. Like he tries it against the counter, against, you know, he does it against the wall where he's trying to staple gun the poster to the wall. By the way, I just want to say, love these posters.
These are fantastic posters.
They are just like, they are so Big Brother. Like, they're big, like they're extra large posters and they have like just that very strong design, like Roy Biggins, you know?
Yes. And Roy's head on it is like the size of like a costume mascot head.
It's almost bigger than, it's almost as big as David Schramm's head in real life.
No, it's even bigger.
Wow. I know. Just kidding.
But I mean, I would vote for the guy based off the posters.
Yeah, same.
Yeah, but I don't know. I don't know what you think about Lowell stapling his leg, but I thought it was kind of low hanging fruit. But I mean, it's kind of funny, you know.
I liked it. Like, I liked the way, because he staples his leg and then Joe's like, are you in pain? And he's got his like lips pursed and he just kind of nods. Mm-hmm.
Do you need to go outside and scream?
And then Roy comes in just like glad handing everybody.
I literally wrote down glad handing and how amazing it is to see Roy glad handing.
Yes. And he just takes a baby from a woman and the baby starts crying.
Yeah. And he kisses it too.
Yes. Oh, it's so funny.
And I can't imagine any mother in the world who would just like tolerate a strange man grabbing the baby and kissing it.
Yeah, seriously.
She doesn't say one word.
It's such a weird thing. Yeah, it's very, very weird.
Yeah.
Roy Biggins for Towns Council. I'm counting on your votes. Roy Biggins, Towns Council. I'm counting on your votes. Yes, yes. And yeah, after the baby starts crying, it's, oh, here, take this. So Roy comes in and he's talking to the gang. He says, you know, guys, this politics game isn't so tough. You just smile a lot, press the flesh a little, and tell people what they want to hear. And Brian goes, hell, put her there and tell me you're moving to Wisconsin. Well, yeah. Wearing the Wisconsin tie, which I thought was really fun.
Yeah, isn't that great?
Yeah.
I don't know how intentional that was on either the writer or the costumer's part, but I thought it was good.
Yeah.
I guess, so this would be the A story, right? The election story. Mm-hmm. And then we get a, like a B story that's introduced here. Well, Brian passes over to Helen. Is she just sitting there with her cello, right, on the counter or something?
I think she's like writing a personal ad. Like she's a piece of paper. Right. She's like writing out the ad.
Yeah, and later she's sitting with the cello. But this is like, I feel this is like the second, third, fourth time Helen in some way has said she's going to quit the cello.
Yeah.
I feel like at this point, is she digging for attention? Like does she just want her friends to say, oh my God, no, you can't. We all love you playing the cello so much.
Yeah, because my thought is fucking quit that cello.
Yeah, just quit that shit already. I'm tired of hearing about your cello. Throw your license plate in the trash. Like, get over it.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that's what she's doing. That's just me maybe reading into it. But Brian, makes a joke about, and it's kind of a cruel joke, but you know, I felt it. I kind of laughed. What does he say? What's his joke? He's like,
she's going, I can't go on pursuing this pipe dream and thinking I'm some classical musician. I've really made up my mind. I'm never going to pick up this cello again. And he goes, oh, by the way, the Boston Pops called. And she's like, oh God, what did they say? And he says, you never should have picked it up in the first place.
Yes.
Yeah.
Such a mean joke. But at this point, I'm going to say she deserves it.
But also, you know what I like about it? She goes, Brian, that was low even for you. And he says, I know. I actually felt myself sinking.
Yeah.
I thought that was like a really funny like acknowledgement. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
I feel like we've all kind of like instinctively said something and then immediately regretted it, like, oh, maybe that was like the wrong thing to say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Like, altogether, that joke might not be taken as like as well as I thought it would.
Exactly. But altogether, kind of a decent moment here between them. But as a B story, what do we get? Two beats of this Helen selling her cello.
Yeah.
Thing. And it, again, with no third beat. And like, if I thought about it for 5 minutes, you could come up with a way to tie the cello into the election, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Something. They could have done something. Or like, well, we'll get to it, the next cello beat, but brought back that cello playing monkey or something into the finale.
I agree. It felt like, I don't know if this is just their MO, like if they're going to kind of just stick with this, or if they're eventually going to like discover that a lot of comedy comes in threes.
Yeah, not only that, but you get such an opportunity with a show like this. Like Seinfeld was really good at this, where you have all these different threads, but then you tie them together in the end.
Mm-hmm.
And like, if they found a way to weave in these like B stories they're working with, and just like come in at the end with a beat that just like hits you over the head, and then
yeah,
it could really work well for this show.
Yeah, you have Kramer trying to like erase the paint lines on the freeway with paint thinner, while Newman drives his like postal van and it's dragging something, causing sparks to like ignite the paint thinner. Yeah. And you end the episode with him driving this postal truck that's like on fire and he's screaming. And it's just like the most satisfying climax of all these different storylines all lining up. It's wonderful.
Yeah, it'd be beautiful. Like, I don't know, just spitballing, but we're like, what if, what was his name? Mr. Larson? What if Mr. Larson came in with the monkey at the end and it turns out they won the election or something, because they delighted the people of Nantucket with a cello playing monkey.
Yeah, because I mean, even beside the rule of threes, they don't give you any like satisfying end to these stories.
Yeah,
because like basically like what we're left with the B story in this one is that she doesn't sell it to Mr. Larson, and then we don't talk about it again.
Yeah. Or like, what if Faye goes, oh, shame I lost. I was going to have a celebratory musical performance. And then you just see Mr. Larson and the monkey like sadly walk out.
Yeah.
I don't know. Something.
Yes.
I don't know. If you mention a monkey, it's Chekhov's monkey. If you mention a monkey, I am just waiting to see a monkey.
Like, Roy opens up the door to his office where he's going to drink that champagne alone. And through the open door, you just see the Mr. Larson and his monkey playing the cello.
Yes, thank you. Love it.
By the way, speaking of Chekhov's gun, are you familiar with the idea of Shakespeare's gun?
No.
This is, as I mentioned earlier, I went to Julius Caesar last night at the Shakespeare in the Park. Independent Shakespeare Company. They did a really, really great job. So, yeah, it's free. It's all summer. And it's like, they're awesome. But they did a funny thing where, like, in one of the scenes, one of the characters pulled out a gun and shot, you know, obviously, like, not.
Yeah, what?
Yeah.
That's no, unlike any Shakespeare I'm familiar with.
Right. It's a very silly move. And it was whatever. It was fine. It got like a few like chuckles.
Huh.
But I was thinking, like, it would have been nice to see it come back because, you know, if you introduce a Shakespeare's gun mm-hmm. in the fourth act, you want to see it come back in the sixth.
Yes.
I don't know.
Then Antonio runs in after this.
Yes.
Oh, no. The council member fell over. He had a heart attack.
Oh, right.
Sorry. So Roy's, I guess, only other opponent in the race is the incumbent council member. And Antonio delivers the news that he had a heart attack.
Mm-hmm.
So this council member was doing a stunt like in a Speedo suit. Like, what was he doing? He was like pulling something
He was swimming across the bay towing a tugboat or like a...
Yes.
He was performing his famous campaign stunt, swimming across the harbor, towing a string of rowboats. And then does Brian say, there's a guy who's not getting anything, any home.
Just imagine. And then what does Antonio say? It's pretty funny.
He says, anyway, when he finishes, he comes up out of the water. And then suddenly he makes a face like so. He has a heart attack. Oh my gosh, is he dead? No, they take him to the hospital. Oh, this will haunt me for the rest of my days. I will never get this picture out of my mind. And they say, watching him collapse like that, and what does he say?
Oh no, seeing a man in his 60s in a Speedo swimsuit.
I loved it. Because I also... It was so bizarre to like my friends and I when we would go to the beach as kids and seeing these like middle-aged men in like little Speedo suits. We're like, what? I don't know. Maybe it's appealing to some women, or maybe it's just really freeing. Maybe it just feels great to like.
Yeah, and did you have that fear catch hold of you? Like, oh my God, do I have to wear a swimsuit like that when I'm that age?
No. I was just like, no, I'll never dress like that.
I always get like when I was that age, I was always get a fear that I would turn into these people that horrified me. Not even imagining that I had a choice of how I want to grow up.
Yeah, just like,
oh my God, I'm going to grow up and be a Republican and wear a Speedo at the beach and I'll like wine coolers. Oh no.
But really that's, I think, more just reminiscent of that generation, I think.
Yes. Yeah.
Like, I think like it's an interesting thing because I think that we relate age sometimes with style. Mm-hmm. And so you'll see like, you know, like a 20-year-old man in 1961 and he'll look really old because he looks like that same man who is now, you know, in his 60s or whatever,
still wearing the same shit.
Like, and he still, you know, has the same little like slang and like the little like, you know, those things that you kind of adopt at a young age. Like I'm sure I look ancient to like some Gen X kids or sorry, some Gen Z. Yeah. Anyway, I mean, and I am old, but you know, when I see like 50 something year old men now, they feel young to me. Whereas I was a kid, a 50 something year old man looked ancient.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. It's interesting.
Helen clocks this, but I clocked it too. Uh-huh. Roy is sitting at the back of the counter, just totally chuffed, smiling, delighting.
Yes.
Because he's realizing that he has no competition in the election.
By the way, just a real quick extra thing. I was at Manhattan Beach on Saturday. My sister was in town. And so like I went, hung out with my family, my nieces and nephews. And there was like a 50 something year old man wearing like a G-string,
nice.
riding a bicycle down the bike path. And I was like, wow, that is like, that's wild.
What did you think this time when you saw him?
I was like, am I going to have to do that?
I like your style, man.
I was considering renting a bike, but I don't know if I want to dress like that.
Damn, those are some pretty good, cool balls. Where'd you get the balls?
Oh, the ball store.
Can I ride that bike after you? Is it warm?
At the ball mall.
The ball mall.
Anyway, so yeah, Helen catches Roy smiling, like a little shit-eating grin.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, why are you smiling, Roy? Was I smiling? Oh, no, Helen, I wasn't smiling. Well, maybe just a little. So yeah, he reveals that he's running unopposed and he's basically going to get like elected to city council.
And but to, you know, to save face being called out, he says he's going to run to the hospital, donate blood.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where he says Katie's blood. And he grabs Katie by the arm, dragging her by the hand. So we learn that the Arrow Mask gal is Katie.
Yeah.
And I guess it's just okay in the Wings universe for your employer to physically force you to undergo a drainage of your blood from your body.
Is that not okay in other universes?
Yeah. You know, my boss has never compelled me to give blood. I'll just say that.
It's a weekly thing now for me.
Really? What's going on over there?
I mean, I kind of thought that it was like crossing a line, but like you saying it out loud now makes me think that maybe, you know, I don't know. And
yeah.
And it's like, cause it's not Red Cross. It's just this, you know, this little like soup kitchen kind of down a back alley.
And the tube's not going into like a bag or anything. It's just going down the drain.
No, it's going into a coffin.
It's horrible, Emerson.
Yeah, it's weird. You saying that now makes me realize it's kind of horrible. I just kind of get excited about it now because we usually stop at Baskin Robbins 31. And, you know, he lets me try a couple samples. And so.
Oh, just the samples. You don't get a scoop?
Oh, no. I wish. Yeah, scoop would be awesome. But, you know, it's not Christmas every week. Oh, anyway. So as we were saying, the rest of the crew start to think about the idea of Roy. Of Roy being a council member.
They start talking some shit. Yeah.
Yeah. Which, I mean, right? Like, you gotta, that would be, I don't know. Like,
fair enough. Yeah, fair point. Like,
we love Roy, but also at the same time, like, if there was like a Roy in our lives, I don't know if we would actually want him to be a councilman.
No, he wouldn't, you know, he would be looking out for his own interests. And if at best he would be inept, at worst he would be like criminal.
I'm not sure what kind of power that affords you being a councilman. If it just like kind of gives you a vote in like upcoming issues, or if there's like more to it than that.
It really depends where you are, what municipality you're in. Like, I suspect in Nantucket, the power might be a little bit more outsized than other places just because it is an island. But like LA, for instance, the council is more powerful than the mayor in LA. So there are some places where you can really affect a lot of things as a council member.
The council as a whole is more powerful.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. So yeah, having Roy on that could be like a scary proposition.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Especially with like, we know from reading the Nantucket Inquirer and Mirror, the politics of the airport is big politics in Nantucket. And he would definitely, like, I would be concerned that he would have an obvious like special interest in matters related, a conflict of interest in matters related to the airport, which I'm sure come up all the time in front of the Nantucket Council.
The new airplane tax only affects airlines with less than two airplanes.
All council matters must take place in Joe's hangar and never take place in Roy's hangar.
Right. Like if Joe ever tries to expand, he's going to get like mute or stifled and muted by Roy.
Yes.
Oh yeah. No. We'll do it next week. We'll bring it up to the council.
That sewage line, or that oil fuel line that the Nantucket's always griping about, it'll travel solely under Joe's strip of land.
Right. Yes.
And Joe personally will have to be in charge of the maintenance of it.
Yeah. Okay, so this scene also has probably the biggest PC violation, right?
Yes, from Brian.
Helen, I have goosebumps. Brian, don't sell yourself short. You fell out that sweater quite nicely.
Yeah, I was like, yikes. Oh. And even the look on Joe's face and Helen's face, and he did not qualify this one by saying, no. Like, oh, I feel low. And that comes on the heels of Joe giving like a rousing speech, right?
Right. Which has like a funny line, a funny Brian line too. Mm-hmm. He's like saying, where are the people who used to run for office? Not because there was anything in it for them, but because they were willing to work, maybe even make a sacrifice for the common good. Do those people just disappear because they used to be here? We called them George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Samuel Adams, John Quincy Adams, and Brian. The Adams family. Yes.
And the whole crew is like just enthralled with this speech. And it sounded like something a fifth grader would write for like a 4th of July project or something, but hey, it worked on them. And so they want to call upon Joe to run for council.
Yeah.
And Joe kind of demurs, but agrees to do it after Faye says that she'll be his campaign manager.
Yeah.
She loves politics.
Yeah.
After Canasta, it's my passion.
Which is, you know, that makes sense. Faye's kind of cutthroat.
Yeah. Yeah. But I didn't even know she was into Canasta.
I didn't either.
She has a lot of passions.
Yeah, she does.
Mm-hmm.
But I love when they get into the glory.
Yeah, I love Brian's drum rolls.
Yes. And so they all go through the dun, 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 dun. His truth is marching on. And then Lull alone starts singing glory, glory, holla. And no one else joins him. Am Poor I the Lull. Only one who that knows the Taurus here?
Lull just slightly out of step with everyone else as always.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Then we cut to the next scene, which I believe is just the second scene of the show, which is the terminal later on, like same day, maybe that night or something.
I think that's right. It's Helen's waiting for a buyer for her cello.
And now here's where she's sitting on the counter with her cello. Yeah. And I guess someone who she met off Craigslist or something or Facebook Marketplace is coming to come pick it up. But she starts stressing about like if imagining like some kid, snot-nosed little brat gets her cello, you know? And so now all of a sudden she just loves this precious object and just is afraid some kid will get their hands on it and abuse it. And, you know, she sure thinks highly of kids for someone who makes at least part of her living as a cello teacher. A little sad for me to. Because we've seen her interact with children a few times on this show, and I think it's safe to say she doesn't like children.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, someone comes to buy it. Mr. Larson.
A Sutherland-looking man.
a Donald Sutherland-looking man.
Yeah, like a white mustache and kind of like that sort of scowly face.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But like, you know, in a refined way.
Yeah, like a, kind of an astute dude. And at first, Helen's kind of cool with it because she asks if he has kids. She's excited that she has no children. So she's imagining this Donald Sutherland looking guy playing the cello.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not the case, is it?
It's not. So she asks...
She like asks him if he'll be playing it or something like that. And he's like, oh, no, no. Jocko will be playing it.
Right.
And Brian gets so excited because now he recognized that Mr. Larson is part of a two-person act of Mr. Larson and Jocko or something like that.
Whoa, one second. I'm sorry. Are you Maynard of Maynard and Jocko? You saw him down in Hyannis. Helen, the monkey fingers with his feet and bows with a banana. And she says, sorry, no sale. And that's the last we ever hear of it.
Yeah, it needed a third beat because I loved this moment. And it like just further reinforced that Brian is just into these like regional traveling carnival acts, you know, like Peppo the Clown. Who was that clown they talked about? Peppo the Clown or something. Mm-hmm. And then now it's like this Maynard and Jocko.
Wait, whoa. One second. I'm sorry. Are you Maynard of Maynard and Jocko?
Yes.
Oh, God. Oh, man. You guys are fabulous. So I'm down in Hyannis. Helen, the monkey fingers with his feet and bows with a banana.
Sorry, no sale.
So evocative, too, the way Brian described it. I loved it.
Yeah, me too.
I still want to see that monkey playing a cello.
Yeah, 100%.
But yeah, but that's the conclusion of the B story, unfortunately.
Yeah. So now Lowell says that he put out a poll down at the beauty parlor.
wait. Because Joe's now talking to Faye because mm-hmm. he missed the Chamber of Commerce meeting, but Faye basically describes how she went in and killed it. And then that's when Lowell comes in with the poll results.
Yeah. Hey, Joe, are you interested in the latest poll results? And he goes, I didn't know we had a polling service on the island. We don't. What we have is me hanging out down at the beauty parlor. And he goes, you can tell how the island's going to vote from that? Oh, yeah. And they let me take home all the hair I want. And Joe goes, what are the results? Hairball about yay big.
Add that to the Lowell list and Lowell collects hair.
Yeah.
Human hair.
It's so weird. He reveals that 48% want Roy, are in favor of old Roy, 35% are in favor of Joe, and 6% think I'd look better with a perm. Mm-hmm.
Make that 7%.
Oh, yeah. Make that 8%. That's sort of a low percentage. Not for me. I made an appointment for next Tuesday.
How good would it be if we tune in next week and Lowell has a perm?
That would rule.
Thomas Hayden Church wasn't brave enough, I think, is what it comes down to.
Yeah, be braver, dude. Come on.
But we do get to see his hatless head at the end of this episode, and his hair's looking really nice, actually.
Yeah.
I feel like it was blow-dried or something for the ending there.
Yeah, maybe. So Faye says that she met with Homer Padnick, the editor-in-chief of the Nantucket Herald.
What?
Maybe the Inquirer and Mirror?
It has to be. A veiled reference.
Right. Yeah, because the editor-in-chief of the Nantucket Inquirer and Mirror is Homer Hatnick. That's not true. Anyway, so she's saying that like whoever the paper endorses usually wins the election, and she thinks that like she put in a pretty good word for Joe to get the backing. And then
Roy, this is when Roy comes in, right?
Yes. Yeah. Revealing a vandalized paper. Who did this?
I love how he rolls it out.
Yes.
With childish, cartoonishly drawn over with marker.
Yeah. Hackett, I figured you'd resort to dirty tricks, but who thought you'd stoop this low? And then Helen says she did it right.
Yeah, Helen claims to do it in a way where that makes me think she probably didn't do it, but it was pretty funny.
Because she says that they were scaring the children, and we know that she doesn't care about children, so.
If anything, she would have left it to scare the children.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She would have handed Roy more babies so they would cry.
And Roy says, like, nothing can stop the Biggins juggernaut. After all, I have got a well-oiled political machine. But have we seen? They haven't really indicated that he has, like, advisors or anything.
I don't think he has. I mean, he has his lackeys that he can force to give blood or something when they're on the clock. But I really don't think he has a cadre of supporters or anything.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking as well. But then he says, all you have are these three Nimrods. And Lowell goes, don't forget about me. Yes. That was very funny.
Mm-hmm.
And then here we go.
Best moment of the show.
Yeah. Antonio comes in. Well, it's out. Today's edition of the Nantucket Herald. That's my attempt at Vincent
Price.
It is
not the Inquirer and Mirror. It is a Herald.
Who'd they endorse? I didn't look. Where I come from, there's a long tradition of killing the messenger. And here we go. Give me that.
It's such a good bit. Who grabs it first? Is it Roy or Joe that grabs it first?
Hackett. It's, I think it's Roy.
Yeah,
and
Roy.
Then he hands it to Joe. You read it. I want to get a clear view of a man taking his last political gasp. Yeah. And then Joe reads it. For the position of town council, the Nantucket Herald endorses Faye Evelyn Cochran. Uh-huh. Me? The paper endorsed me? That's impossible. You're not even running. And then give me that. I think that's Roy grabbing
give
it again.
Me that. Oh, they couldn't endorse me. They wouldn't endorse me. Uh-uh. No, they wouldn't.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, no. Next one is give me that. And it's Lowell. And he starts laughing. What's so funny? Oh, Marmaduke got in the refrigerator again. Yes. Crazy dog. And then
give
I think
me that.
I think that's Roy.
Yeah. Give me that.
Yeah. And then Brian, give me that. Hey, it looked like fun.
Yeah. And the gimme that joke runs so long and so well that they even take a commercial break after, I think, the first gimme that.
Oh, yeah. I think back. You're right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was thinking of that Eazy-E song.
Gimme that. 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 It's mine. I paid for it.
Gimme that nut. Gimme that, that nut. Gimme that, gimme that, gimme that nut. Damn. Yeah.
I still remember the Green Acres bridge from that song.
Oh my God.
How's it go?
In some pussy is the place to for be. Me.
Always fucking is the life for me. Spreading legs open far and wide. Hey, oh, fuck this shit. Just let me get my dick inside.
Give me that nut.
And then, so Roy, before we get the last gimme that, Roy's pissed, and Joe and Faye and everyone else is surprised.
Yeah, the article paper. Basically says, like, it would seem the only choice was Joe Hackett, but he was relying on his boyish good looks and says that, like, Faye is the true dynamic force behind him.
Yeah, and then we get one more gimme that, don't we?
Yeah, Antonio. He goes, gimme that. It's mine. I paid for it.
Good point, Antonio. But in this moment, Faye agrees to run, you know, and Roy's pissed. He's going to fight to the end. No, in a no prisoners dog fight.
And she gave him some goodies?
Oh, she gave I think she gave the editor brownies or something.
Yeah.
Which she made,
I was talking about my double fudge brownies. But like when she says I gave him some goodies, he goes, I bet you did, sister. Like insinuating that
she fucked the editor of the Nantucket Herald.
I mean, she did because she says, I was talking about my double fudge brownies before we fucked.
I gave him a handy. He liked it, I think. I stretched my legs open far and wide.
Oh,
he came inside of me. I showed him my fried egg boobies, both of them.
I saw it. It was big. I saw all of it.
I exposed my clitoris to him. He liked it.
The big clitoris is a good one.
Nothing compares to it.
All right.
Okay. Then we get to the next scene.
We're in Joe's office where Faye is working on her debate speech.
Yeah, just writing that debate speech.
This is like after hours at Wings.
I do love, though, how Faye kind of like, okay, she's running for office now. She edged Joe out of the race and she just takes over Joe's office as like her campaign office.
But yeah, so Joe tells her like not to work too late, whatever. Oh, that's just actually like a really fun exchange, too. Mm-hmm. When
Faye's apologizing a lot to Joe, but he's kind of like, oh, sure. Yeah, no, I understand. Yeah. But she just keeps apologizing and he's like, Faye, I'm trying to be a good sport about this.
Yeah, because she says like, sorry. Yeah, he comes in and he says like, she tells him, oh yeah, she's like, I hope you're not angry. He's like, no, I'm not angry. And she says like, you know, I think you would have made a wonderful councilman. And he says, well, if it's not going to be me, I'm glad it's going to be you. And she goes, oh, Joe, do you really mean that? And he kind of like through gritted teeth says, Faye, I'm trying to be a good sport about this. So that was like kind of cute.
Yeah, it was a good moment.
Yeah. And then he leaves and then Roy comes in and we get like, poor old Roy.
Mm-hmm.
Does so well.
He does really well. And like, you know, personally, if I was Faye, I would not give in to this. But Roy does not mind groveling and being pathetic. That's something I like about Roy.
He almost feels like a vaudevillian hobo or something.
Yes, like, yes.
Like the poor, sad, degenerate. Don't you feel sorry for him? Don't you want to like reach out with your heart and give him money, whatever, tuppence?
When I was in the fifth grade, I ran for class president. I was up against Dennis Doyle, Mr. Athlete, Mr. Popular. I thought I could take him on the issues. I had some good ideas. I thought if I could just get people to listen. But when I was given my speech in the assembly hall, one of his friends snuck up behind me and pantsed me. There I was, in front of the whole student body, with my trousers around my ankles. I tried to run, but I fell off the stage. Guess I should have pulled my pants up first. I'll tell you something, Faye. I've been trying to get those pants back up for the last 30 years. This election is my chance. Help me, Faye. Help me pull my pants up.
He gives her this whole big sob story about how he's such a loser. He's never won anything. And this is, he cares about Nantucket so much. And this is so important to him.
Yeah.
Faye does, and I think she should see through this, but at the same time, he is so effective at just being pathetic that you can feel sorry for him despite the fact that you know he's he's totally full of shit.
Yeah. It's great.
Mm-hmm. It is good, yeah.
I mean, and like as a viewer, I want to see Roy as city councilman because I just want to see what he does with that.
Yeah, like just like take the show in a whole new direction. It's now following like the Nantucket City Council. You never see any of the other characters again, but it's still called Wings for some reason.
Well, just like the same way I want to see Brian run the airport. I want to see like I want to see an episode where Roy is just like struggling to like have political clout in this town that like doesn't give a shit about him.
You can call it the West Wings or something.
Hey, do you want to start a podcast called the West Wings Nuts? Yes. Okay, so basically, yeah, he appeals to her and then he like leaves with that, you know, like lets her kind of stew about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think does it cut from that to the debate?
Yes. And of course, the debate takes place in the hangar because every community event that takes place in Nantucket seems to happen in the hangar.
You know, I didn't even realize it was the hangar.
It's everything, though. The blood drives. Yeah. What else can we think of that happened there? Like everything happens in the hangar.
Also, I love the way he delivers in the last scene. I'm a loser. I've been a loser my whole life.
Uh-huh.
Just the way he sells it is so funny.
Yeah. Oh, and did you say like what he said as he's passing out the door? He said, Faye, I'm begging you, if not for me, then for that apple-cheeked little boy with his pants down around his ankles.
Yes. Oh my God. It that was so funny.
Line got me.
Yeah. And I also like Faye, like being like, is security still around? Like when he's like really like trying to like corner her.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah. So we begin the debate. We start the scene with him saying, so in closing, when you elect Roy Biggins, you're electing a man of vision, a man of ideas, a man who is poised to guide Nantucket into the 21st century. And it's going very, very poorly. It's clear that like the audience is just not on board.
And like it's effective at he and Roy is so good at he's actually looking like very affected and emotional and sad. Mm-hmm. And like they really do make it seem like the crowd is there to bully him.
Yes. Yeah. Very reminiscent of that old story.
Yeah.
And so they give the mic to Faye and Faye gives like a, you know, when you elect me, I'm not going to let you down. I'm going to run this town, blah, blah. And then people start asking questions. Yes. Right. Like, am I missing anything there? Or do you?
No, she gives a very like boilerplate speech that you write on a napkin in 10 seconds. And then, yeah, they go to the audience to ask questions from the community. And by this, we mean community of her coworkers.
And so man number one says, you say you believe in preserving the beauty of Nantucket. Yes, that's right. Then why don't you start by getting that heap you drive off the street?
Yes.
And everybody laughs. Yeah, and throw that student with it.
And I'm going to call you tonight at 3 a.m. and wake you up.
Yeah.
And then there's a moment where Lowell waves at Faye. Oh, I didn't have a question. Just saying hi to my friend.
Yeah.
Then Helen asks Faye, like, what she thinks of Roy's policies.
His and so-called ideas. His so-called ideas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Faye, a great little moment. She looks over at Roy and she's starting to be affected by how the audience is treating Roy. And she looks over and all she sees is a little boy with his pants down.
Yeah.
And so she goes out of her way to praise Roy's policies and be kind to him. And then that's why Brian puts his hand up and asks,
I have one question. Have you lost your mind?
And doesn't Helen have small tits? Yeah, man. It's
yeah.
Yeah. She basically she says she commends him for having solid ideas. Yeah. And we cut to the following scene back at the airport where they're watching the results featuring our other featured actor, mm-hmm. guest star.
Who was in the TV.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And
which I thought was framed kind of funny. I mean, obviously it's they're shooting it to be a fake news program, but it captures the time pretty well.
It does. Yeah. Although as someone who's waited anxiously for election results, the local news is never where you get them for local elections, but yeah, it did look like a local kind of news talking head.
Yeah, on a green screen in front of a map of Nantucket. And so is it before that Roy kind of pulls Faye aside and thanks her?
Yeah.
I think it starts off, Helen is I'll never understand that performance of yours last night, Faye. You could have wiped the floor with Roy. And someone else is yeah, I hit the Christmas, but even I could have done better. Well, I just don't believe in slinging mud. Well, he sure slung some at you. A few days ago, he called you a left-leaning pinko lackey of special interest groups. And she says, that can be taken two ways. Oh, and no, it's at this point that Roy grabs her and says, listen, no matter how this turns out, I want to thank you for what you did last night.
Oh, don't
mention it, Roy. No, I laid in bed last night thinking, how can I thank Faye? How can I express to her my appreciation? Then it came to me. Mail order steaks. So don't be surprised if you find a couple of T-bones on your doorstep in 6 to 8 weeks. very, very cute.
That was great. And I laughed really hard at Brian too in that moment you mentioned where he had the line about the left-leaning pinko lackey of special interest groups. That sounds like an insult you'd hear today too.
And that moment when he kind of tells her that he's getting her the steaks makes me think that he might have been more genuine about wanting to win because he was always felt
Yeah.
I think that the power will immediately corrupt him. But I feel in this moment, it's he does just want to win something. I don't know.
He fantasizes about doing good, but won't put in the effort to try to do good or even really even know what doing good looks like.
Yeah.
I mean, when it comes down to it, he wants to be liked. But he's his own worst enemy.
He won't take that purple El Camino off the road.
Yeah.
That heap. I love that word, heap.
And then they announce the results, right?
And so Roy wins.
Roy won.
Mm-hmm. And he's going, I won. I won. I won. I won. He's so excited. And he says, can I have your attention, please? I just want to thank all the kind people who supported me. And rest assured that Roy Biggins will serve as councilman with compassion, sensitivity, and honesty. Because Roy Biggins is a man of the people. Now it's time to crack open the champagne. And he cracks it open and immediately goes, people start to follow him to the his office. He's like, hey, who invited you?
Yes. Slams the door in their face.
And then what's Faye's last line? Well, she's licking her lips. looking at that.
She says,
looking at those candy hams and that 70s tweed.
I say we pants him. Perfect.
Yeah, so great.
Yeah, that's dang. We talked about the whole episode, huh?
The whole damn episode.
God damn. Before we get into the finer details, do you want to give this a rating?
I like this episode, but I mean, I didn't love it, but I liked it a lot. So I think I'm going to do like probably like 3.25. I thought it was pretty great. Like, it was a good episode but it didn't have like any real highs.
It had a couple of really strong jokes, a couple of moments really I laughed a lot, and the gimme that bit is like, to me, that's one of the best bits, and so it's
gimme that was great, but the B story like falls flat.
I would like this. I would like to kind of think of this episode as Wings batting par, you know, or playing at par. I would also give this a 3-stripe rating and say it's a good episode.
Yeah, definitely. Like, it's like above average to me.
I would, my hopes would be that like if every episode of Wings was this good and then some are much better, I'd be a happy camper.
It's a good B episode. Like,
yeah,
like a 80%. Yeah. Anyway, any last thoughts?
No, just, I think we covered it. You know, I really wish that there was a third beat to that cello monkey storyline. It went nowhere. I thought Antonio was used well in this episode. He had some fun moments. Like,
yeah,
we highlighted the gimme that moment. It was the best moment of this. I do love like Roy being on the council. I hope that bears fruit and we get some related storylines to that later on. I hope that comes back.
Yeah, me too.
And one other thing, you mentioned to me before we started that you liked the dynamic between Helen and Joe in this, and I felt the same. Like, it was a sense of relief just to see the gang be in the gang without this relationship kind of turmoil. And it's kind of cool that they've gotten back to like just being friends, you know?
Yeah, I think what I said is I like just like the general airport dynamics between everybody, that there's not this like ongoing, like there's no mention of... And also, we haven't even heard about Joe's girlfriend in a few episodes, which to me is great.
Yeah.
Like, I don't need to be reminded that you have a girlfriend all the time.
Yeah, Gail is stale. Never mention her again.
That's a note to all my friends who are in relationships. Stop mentioning it to me. No, just kidding.
Don't talk about your dogs. Don't talk about your kids. I don't want to hear it.
I love love. I just, I'm like happy for all my friends in relationships. I just don't like it like... the way it was being used earlier in this season and like late last season, where it became this like, they were trying to like use it as a storyline that that like just didn't feel compelling to me.
Yes, agreed.
You want to close it out?
Sure, why not? That's it. We talked about this episode of Wings, and next week we will return to talk about the 6th episode of season 3 entitled My Brother's Keeper.
Cool.
And if you want to throw us a rating, thank you to the recent commenters on Spotify of some of our episodes. And you can throw us a comment, throw us a rating, something like that on your preferred podcast app of choice.
Hell yeah.
And Emerson, thank you for hanging out, talking Wings with me.
Jared, thank you. Had a blast.